Greetings, friends. I'm John Haspel. This is a recording of my Thursday evening Dhamma talk on May 9th, 2019. This talk is on the 19th chapter of the Dhammapada, known as the Dhammatavagga. If you find benefit from this talk, please consider a donation at becoming-buddha.com. Thank you. Peace. Greetings, friends. Tonight's talk is from the, again, from the Dhammapada. This is the 19th chapter of the Dhammapada, subtitled Judgment and Wisdom. And it's a teaching on, again, on the importance of integrating the Buddha's Dhamma, period. But then in this case, if one is to judge or evaluate one's own Dhamma practice or judge and evaluate others' Dhamma practice, and if one hopes to teach the Dhamma, it must be from the understanding, vision, and knowledge gained through the Eightfold Path. And here the Buddha cautions against incorporating other things that have proven over the years to be simply more distractions, and I would say distractions from developing concentration. This is from my introduction, then I'll get to the sutta. The sutta below is from Dhammapada 19. It teaches the importance of developing the heartwood of the Dhamma. Whenever the Buddha is referencing heartwood, he's always talking about the Eightfold Path. There is no other heartwood. That's the heartwood. If one is to safely judge one's own Dhamma practice and judge and teach others. So if we're following what the Buddha teaches, unfortunately, there's not a lot of qualified modern Buddhist teachers around today because very few have actually studied and incorporated the Eightfold Path as the Buddha intended. I don't mean any disrespect toward anyone, any other sincere or insincere teacher for that matter. One of the things that has been so impactful for me once I started actually studying what the Buddha taught in contrast to what I was taught previously and in contrast to what is called Mahayana or even modern Theravadan Buddhism is so distinctly incompatible and often contradictory and almost always confusing that I see how important, I understand the importance that the Buddha taught on keeping a Dhamma practice well focused on the Dhamma, and equally as important to recognize what is the Dhamma and what isn't the Dhamma, no matter how, what labels we might put on it or how our friends or associates are developing or what's the next great podcast from so-and-so and so-and-so or the newest psychological model that we're now calling Buddhism. Well, none of that, obviously, did the Buddha teach, and it becomes a distraction from actually developing what the Buddha taught. And that's what this short sutta that's being made much longer by me. If one is to safely judge one's Dhamma practice and judge and teach others, it also presents the Buddha's caution against incorporating confusing and unskillful common Dhamma practices, such as forced silent retreats, mindless rituals, meditation practices that encourage distraction and continued self-reference, and anything that dismisses or negates the framework and guidance of the Eightfold Path. And there's a lot of that around today, unfortunately. We have our spring retreat coming up, and I've never led and will never lead a silent retreat because to me it's just a complete contradiction of everything the Buddha teaches to spend even an hour, I was going to say, to spend a week or 10 days or a month or longer in forced silence is something the Buddha never taught, even though when you say retreat, almost everybody thinks, I'll get that reaction. Oh, I don't know about that. I could never sit silently. I could never try to still my mind. Well, the Buddha didn't teach any of those things. He taught right speech and noble silence when right speech cannot be incorporated in the present moment. But that's all. So let me read the sutta. Just to conclude that saying, when we negate even the opportunity to hear and study the Dhamma, which is why the Buddha said that we come together as a Sangha to listen to Dhamma and to study. when we practice a silent retreat, we spend hours, days, weeks, months, and sometimes years avoiding even the possibility of hearing the true Dhamma. And so to me, a retreat is, and I run my retreats this way, is an opportunity to hear the Dhamma, and the environment is such that it supports incorporating the Dhamma. That's a wise retreat. From the Dhammapada 19, it's called the Dhammatavagga. Judging mindlessly does not define a judge. And so there's a lot of that today. Just because we happen to offer our opinions loosely and often doesn't make us a judge. The Buddha describes a judge as a wise one who knows both right judgment and wrong judgment. That relates directly to the Eightfold Path and the first factor of right view and wrong view. If you're rooted in wrong view, your judgment is going to be a wrong judgment. It's just that simple. The wise judge others impartially, mindfully, and consistent with the Dhamma. So again, the Buddha's teaching us how to judge others. We have to do it consistently with the Dhamma. How do we do that? We have to develop the Dhamma. The wise guard the Dhamma and so are guarded by the Dhamma. That's another such an important point. And that has developed in me since I've been teaching the Dhamma, just how important it is to guard it. And in order to guard something, you have to understand what it is and where it is. You can't guard the Hope Diamond if it's not in your possession and you know exactly where it is. You can't guard the Dhamma unless you actually own the Dhamma. I mean, you've studied it and developed it yourself. And you know how to readily reference it through refined mindfulness. The wise guard the Dhamma and are guarded by the Dhamma. Establish in right view. Intelligent. This one can now be called the judge. Establish in right view. Again, how do we, if you took this one chapter out of context, which many people do, it has no reference to understanding dependent origination or Four Noble Truths or developing the Eightfold Path, gaining insight into the three marks of existence through a well-concentrated mind, framed again by the Eightfold Path. It could be taken that, well, all I got to do is develop some kind of general wisdom, which most people don't even understand what that means, and then I can be called a judge. The Buddha said that we must be established in right view, intelligent in right view, knowing right view, and then this one can be called a judge. Simply talking often does not define wisdom. So before I finally settled on studying and practicing and teaching only what the Buddha taught as preserved in the Sutta Pitakas, and I was going around to different centers and temples and places of Buddhist worship, if I can put it that way, there were always, or almost always, bringing in one guest or another who had something else to talk about that they or others applied the Buddhist label to, even though they had obviously no understanding of what the Buddha actually taught. But since they're in this general mindfulness, modern Buddhist movement, anything they say, or as the Buddha said, simply talking often, does not define wisdom. And I remember spending many nights being quite uncomfortable and distracted because of that, with these wonderful people that were teaching so-called Dharma that had nothing to do with the Buddha's Dhamma. And this underlying dis-ease that I had was just that. I was sitting here listening, or sitting there listening, to teachings that I knew couldn't possibly be useful or effective Dhamma teachings, and yet I was associating with and part of this scene that encouraged it at nearly every time that the group, I can't even really call it a sangha, because a sangha is something that is well focused on the Buddha's Dhamma, but every time this group got together in the center to hear whatever, and often these centers will just simply take a suggestion from someone else who doesn't know anything about the Dhamma, and just simply because they're a member of this association, well, I'd like to hear from, tonight we're going to listen to some poems by this certain teacher, or listen to a talk from this podcast and call it Buddhist practice. It simply isn't. And the Buddha says simply talking often does not define wisdom. People could say that about me, but the difference is that the only thing I do talk about and teach is what can be found in the Sutta Pitaka. Secure in knowledge, free of fear and aversion, this one can be called wise. Simply talking often does not maintain the Dhamma. Hearing little, meaning not constantly exposing ourselves to a lot of the background noise that's so common in modern life, but unfortunately so common in many modern so-called Dharma centers. Hearing little, but integrating heartwood, is one mindful of the Dhamma, and they are one who maintains the Dhamma. In other words, hearing little mean that what you're listening to as Dhamma practice is actually well focused on the Dhamma and not getting off into all kinds of side channels or side streams. These are great lines here from the Buddha. Gray hair does not define an elder or a teacher. Again, you could have spent 80 years talking about modern Buddhism. It doesn't define you as an elder or a teacher. You have to actually study the Dhamma. Advanced in years but lacking heartwood, one simply remains foolish. Think about the setting here. This is 2,600 years ago. The Buddha's Dhamma is just now being introduced to the world. And the Buddha even then is cautioning against any and all practices that we become enamored with but will simply leave us foolish. Advanced in years but lacking heartwood, this one remains foolish. One who knows the Four Noble Truths, mindful of restraint, of good character, gentle, in control of thoughts, words, and deeds, the defilements vanquished, awakened, this one can be called an elder and a teacher of those fit to be taught. Another important line. What makes one fit to be taught? Initially, it is someone who has a sincere desire to learn what an awakened human being actually taught and to begin to narrow their focus on just that. These are my comment in here, and I think I'll read it. Nothing determines an authentic Dhamma teacher except knowledge and understanding developed from studying and practicing the Buddha's Dhamma. Makes sense. The Buddha continues. Not by sophisticated rhetoric or the donning of colored robes does an envious and miserly imposter become a sage at peace. Only one who has uprooted arrogance and hatred, abandoned ignorance, and developed wisdom can be called a sage at peace. Only one who has uprooted ignorance and hatred, abandoned ignorance, and developed wisdom can be called a sage at peace. And again, taken out of context, is lacking direction. But when we understand that the Buddha taught a single path called an Eightfold Path, that when developed, that will allow us to uproot arrogance and hatred and abandon ignorance and develop wisdom. And then we can be called, rightfully so, authentically so, with fidelity to the Buddha's Dhamma, a sage at peace. A shaven head does not equal concentration. Just to comment again on the many different... One of the things that was always surprising to me, whether it was with a local center or at a regional center of a particularly worldwide practice, how often it seemed like there was such importance put on donning the robes and donning the appearance of Buddhism, and very little effort put into actually developing what the Buddha taught. And so I saw a lot of shaven heads that never developed a concentration practice. Dismissing the heartwood, consumed by greed, there is no concentration. One who abandons greed, aversion, and deluded thinking, through non-distraction, establishing jhana, meaning concentration, moment by moment, this one can be called well-concentrated, a true contemplative. The Buddha continues, seeking alms, donning robes, mindless rituals does not define a sincere Dhamma practitioner. It's always surprising to me, again, when I used to be a part, I'm thinking of a somewhat local sangha now. I don't know if you can, again, you really can't call it a sangha. It's a center. It's actually kind of a regional Buddhist center. But the enamored way that these wonderful folks are they're so enamored with all the things that they've adapted as a so-called Buddhist practice that they don't realize the wasted effort they're putting in all these rituals and non-effective so-called meditation practice, and they're doing just that. And I can't help but notice the smugness that they've developed by donning these robes and aligning themselves and attaching themselves, clinging to these rites and rituals that define themselves. Now they're because of this incorporation, they're able to, in their minds and agreed with each other as effective Buddhists. And in one sense they are. They're certainly very effective Buddhists in incorporating every available idea that might be loosely associated with mindfulness or Buddhism, but they're learning almost nothing, in most cases nothing at all, about what the Buddha taught. And that really is a shame. It's one of the few things that still sadden me when I see sincere, and I have quite a few friends who are sincere Buddhist seekers, but they're so distracted by what they think and want Buddhist practice to be, whether it's through their direct associations or what they've decided to associate with as far as philosophies. And it really is sad, because they have literally fooled themselves into thinking they're doing something that is going to bring them understanding, the understanding that a Buddha taught. But of course, the Buddha is teaching is the only way to develop the understanding of a Buddha is to actually practice what he taught. And many people will say, well, we don't know that. We do know it. And all we have to do is to study and practice what the Buddha taught and have our own direct experience to know it for ourselves. Let me go back to that one. Seeking alms, donning robes, mindless rituals does not define a sincere Dhamma practitioner. Again, those are the Buddha's words from 2,600 years ago. So this misapplication and misassociation with Dharma practices was common even during the Buddha's time. The Buddha continues, only those that abandon both gaining merit, most of those, there's such a great emphasis in modern Buddhism, particularly certain forms of Mahayana Buddhism, about gaining merit. And usually that merit has to do with sending a lot of money to that particular organization. It's not always true, but there's other ways that people teach to gain merit. And if that merit is always focused on some future benefit, you're not practicing the Buddhist Dhamma, and you're trying to establish yourself in some speculative, magical, mystical future realm, which again is completely contradicts what the Buddha taught. Gaining merit, and let me have to go back again. Only those that abandon both gaining merit in that way and the three defilements of greed, aversion, and ongoing deluded thinking, meaning thinking lacking understanding of Four Noble Truths, living always with restraint, with wisdom, this one abides. I might have made that too. Only those that abandon both gaining merit and the three defilements, and of course we abandon three defilements through the Eightfold Path, by living always with restraint. That's such an important part of the Buddha's teaching. Living always with restraint through the framework and guidance of the Eightfold Path, with wisdom, that one abides. Excuse me. The Buddha continues, this one can be called a Dhamma practitioner. How simple can it be? If we want to truly be Dhamma practitioners, there it is, develop the Eightfold Path. The Buddha continues, such an important line, and I wish more people could hear this. I declare, it is not by silence does the confused and deluded, the ignorant, become a sage of peace. It is not by silence. You think about all the wasted effort that goes into this. And I know many people will talk about silent retreats and how wonderful they feel. Most of that is because they've now entered into a structure. They've immersed themselves in a structure that encourages a complete lack of insight into the three marks of existence. It discourages actually developing what the Buddha taught. And in many cases, that will feel good because we're doing something that seems purposeful. There's a bunch of other people doing the same thing, and we don't have to deal with the actual problem of our own ignorance. Now, many, many people, I just read an online article about someone talking about a 10-day Vipassana retreat and how it was, when it was all over, he sat down with one of the other attendees, and they both kind of laughed, and they they both agreed that the best thing about this 10 days was that it was finally over. And that's really how I felt. I spent many times in 7 and 10 day Vipassana retreats, always thinking that I was doing something wrong because I wasn't gaining, I couldn't find anything of any real value in what I was doing. And the best part of those kind of retreats for me was that they came to an end and I was able to leave and start incorporating the Dhamma the way that I felt was most effective. And it certainly isn't through silence. And then I came across this and it got me thinking, well, why would the Buddha say that? And I started putting together what I understood about the experiential nature of what the Buddha taught. And it became pretty obvious to me that any type of forced behavior modification, and especially something that denies the opportunity for right speech and noble silence, meaning conscious, is antithetical to the Buddha's Dhamma. But the wise one, able to discern the ordinary from the excellent, rejects what is evil and becomes a sage at peace. I mean, we have to have discernment. Just because everybody else is sitting around in silence or maybe mumbling mantras over and over again, or doing endless walking meditation or endless bowing, any of these endless rituals, we know that's not what an awakened human being teaches. We're able to discern the ordinary from the excellent. We reject what is evil or rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths, and we can become sages at peace. The Buddha continues, those who are able to discern both sides of the world. Again, this almost compulsive need today to describe all spiritual practices as basically one thing with one goal, and we're all going to the same place, and we all basically have one teacher, and the underlying all this is just nonsense. And the Buddha speaks to that. We're supposed to develop through the Eightfold Path the ability to discern what is foolish and what is worthwhile. That's the whole point of the Eightfold Path. Those who are able to discern both sides of the world, the foolish and the heartwood, can be called the sage of peace. Remaining harmless to all living beings, one becomes noble. Remaining gentle to all living beings, one becomes noble. Now again, remember, the context and what the Buddha's teaching this. Some people will say, well, calling out or pointing out the differences between what the Buddha taught and what others are teaching is in some way hurtful. That's just a consequence of living in a world rooted by ignorance that would profess Dharma's rooted in ignorance. I learned that from studying what the Buddha. The Buddha spent nearly as much time teaching what his Dhamma wasn't as teaching what it was, and that's important. Discernment means having gained the ability and the right view to be able to wisely discern what's foolish and what is helpful. And again, when we develop the Eightfold Path and truly understand what that means, then we are using the Eightfold Path as that framework and guidance to see and understand foolish behavior and noble behavior. Buddha's talking about. Friends, don't be fooled by your practices or habits, by your sophisticated rhetoric, by your meditative superiority, people talking about how long they meditate when they're not doing anything of any real value. Friends, don't be fooled by your practices, your habits, by your sophisticated rhetoric, by your meditative superiority, or simply a quiet dwelling. Meaning, we can create the cloak of Dhamma/Dharma practice, but that doesn't make it Dhamma practice. Dhamma practice makes it Dhamma practice. Friends, don't be fooled by the thought that you teach those that don't know. Friends, don't be fooled by the thought that you teach those that don't know. When you are complacent, meaning when you haven't developed the Dhamma, that is where greed, aversion, and delusion continue. Here is where the heartwood is forgotten. What the Buddha's talking about is simply because I can gather people that listen to me about this next great mindfulness meditation or this next great vision or this ritual or this psychological trick, and I'm going to call it Buddhism. grasping after those and presenting those simply because people will spend money on me to do that is rooted in greed, isn't it? It has nothing to do with developing the Buddha's Dhamma. And that's an act of complacency. I become complacent because it gives me something that feeds my ego, my self-reference. When you are complacent, where greed, aversion, and delusion continue, here is where the heartwood is forgotten. So in other words, any Dhamma practice that doesn't respect and provide fidelity to the Buddha's Dhamma is not heartwood of the Dhamma. It's simply the Buddha's word. And again, it's not saying other people are bad or evil or anything like that, except in the Buddha's lexicon. But you're not a Dhamma practitioner. You've lost the ability in the context of what the Buddha is teaching here, but also in a much greater context, without incorporating the Buddha's Dhamma, or by adapting, accommodating, and embellishing the Buddha's Dhamma, adding things to it, or altering aspects of it to fit what might be called a more modern view, or a Mahayana view, or a Theravadan view. As soon as you start distorting the Buddha's Dhamma, you've lost the entire Dhamma. There's not just enough left to keep us inspired or enough left to keep us to the goal. As soon as you do anything that distracts from the Buddha's pure and complete Dhamma, you now have a lost and foolish Dharma practice. And that's what the Buddha's teaching here. It's what I hope to teach and impress on people. And if I have, please consider a donation at becoming-buddha.com. I will not be giving a Thursday talk next week, but I will be back the week after. Next week is our spring retreat, and there's still a few spaces left over if any of you listening are interested. And there's info on that on becoming-buddha.com too. Thank you for watching. Peace. Thank you for listening. I rely on donations to support these talks. If you find benefit from these talks, please consider a donation at becoming-buddha.com. I welcome your questions and comments. To contact me and for guided meditations and instructions, Dhamma articles, recorded talks, and videos, please visit becoming-buddha.com. These talks are copyrighted and are distributed under a Creative Commons License 4.0. Peace.